Good afternoon, everyone. We'll go ahead and get started. We have a couple of items on our agenda this afternoon. First up, we have a Rochester Downtown Alliance update. John Bowman is here as the executive director, so take it away, John.
Good afternoon, everybody. So it's been a couple of months since I've seen you all. So just a reminder, I started with the RDA back in the beginning part of May. A couple of people I want to introduce before we get into the content of the material. All three RDA staff are here today. I'll quick let them introduce themselves.
My name is Andrew Goachman. I'm the marketing manager for the RDA.
I'm Laura Engelman, the community engagement manager. I'm Carly McElroy, the events and volunteer coordinator.
So both Carly and Andrew started with the RDA in July, and Laura started here in January. And I have Dan Aguilar, our vice chair, with me as well. What I really wanted to do today was to provide some information specifically about the RDA, but I want to make sure we also have some time for some conversation. So if there's particular questions that you have for me, I'd love to be able to answer those or just have kind of an open discussion about any of the topics that we cover in the presentation today. So as you may be aware, the RDA's mission be a unique, vibrant urban experience, a central gathering place for the community that is attractive, inviting, fun, and livable. Really, our three main pillars of our strategic vision: create a sense of community through our quality of life experiences, advocate for positive experience, and then promote the downtown identity. So I think one of the specific ways that you see us doing that is through our core events. This gives you a snapshot of our event calendar for the 2015 year. We're gearing up for Socialize, which is starting tomorrow, and then happening on both Friday and Saturday. That event, if you are aware of it, it's the seventh year of the event. We're a couple of weeks later this year. There was hope that maybe we could get some warmer weather by moving a couple of weeks later. But, of course, we're experiencing some unseasonably cold weather this week. But still, I think a lot of people are really excited about the events. Very similar setup to what you've seen in the past. Seven bars that will be servicing out of ice bars, as well as a number of different ice sculptures, including a replica of the Corn Tower, which I'm thinking will get a lot of engagement. So we've got a wonderful partnership with the Rochester Airport, as well as the YMCA. We'll be offering free trolley rides both Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. So really excited about bringing the community together. I have a feeling we'll push past 50,000 in attendance over the 3 days. So, to really think about how much activity that creates for the plaza. And during a very cold time of the season, it's just pretty crazy. We'll have another season of Thursdays on First. We start June 4th this year. It goes until the 27th. Movies on the Plaza happening again June, July, and August. Two new particular events that I wanted to bring your attention to is we have the Red Ball Project coming June 6th to the 12th. I'll get more into that in just a second. We're also rolling out a new dog-focused event in August, which we're really excited about, just kind of bringing hopefully a different type of clientele downtown. In most downtowns that you visit, you often see a lot of dogs out and about, and we really think between residents and visitors that this will be a really neat way to engage with kind of a new crowd of people. Style in the Plaza happens in September. That event we sell out every single year. We sell close to 600 tickets and have over 20 merchants involved in that event. And then again, Small Business Saturday, that was a new focus of ours this last year, and we're looking to expand on those local and national efforts. I also really wanted to highlight the Red Ball Project, which again is coming in June. It'll be here in Rochester and on seven different locations throughout the city. We're looking to share those with the community hopefully sometime in April. But it's an interactive piece of public art. It's 15 feet tall, deflated and inflated. It weighs about 250 pounds. And it's truly an engaging piece, so you can run into it, you can, touch it. What we're excited about is really the opportunity for the community to get involved in it and see it in kind of some unique places. So if you see, these two particular examples, it's really supposed to be kind of a shocking piece, but it's really meant to initiate some fun kind of energy around it. So we know we'll be working closely with organizations UD and others to get the word out about the fact that this will be here in Rochester. It's been in other communities around the U.S. as well as outside, but this is the first time that it will be back in the United States. It's been out of the U.S. for about 4 or 5 years, so a really exciting project that we'll be doing there. One of the other programs I wanted to highlight today was our gift card program. This was launched, it came out of our marketing committee, Dan is the chair of that group. It was launched in late 2013. It's currently accepted at over 15 downtown Rochester businesses. Right now it's mostly sold online, but one of the things I did want to highlight is between November and December, we did have them available on sale through us, and there were 3 days that we sold those gift cards out of the shops at University Square. And just really during the holiday season alone, we sold over $3,500 worth of gift cards. So if you think about, you know, really keeping dollars in downtown and making it easy for the consumers to utilize, you know, that I know is a program that the marketing committee is continuing to focus on and grow. And I think there were hopes to have those gift cards available through the information kiosk during the summer months. So we've heard some really positive feedback both from consumers, but also as different groups come in through the CVB or through Mayo. And it's an easy piece for people, you know, to be handed a $25 gift card and say, you know, choose whichever downtown restaurant you'd like. So I think a really great program that we coordinate. Another one of the programs I wanted to highlight is our Downtown Cultural Initiatives grant. So this is a program that we have to set up that is meant to support events in downtown. So in 2014, we provided 13 grants. They were ranged in amount from $300 to $1,000. There was a $1,000 cap, and these events were held within our 44-block area. It's meant to help get activities happening in spaces that are maybe a little bit unique or underutilized. One particular grant that was awarded was to the Rochester Youth Soccer Association. This was in conjunction with their large soccer tournament that they hold in the summer. And they had a World Cup viewing on the Peace Plaza, and they had over 550 people in attendance. So if you think about the activities that are happening throughout our city and the way that they were able to utilize this grant funding to you know, create kind of a unique experience, both in conjunction with their tournament, but have that in downtown, we heard a lot of great feedback about that. For 2015, we've improved our grant program in terms of our application as well as our feedback form. This year, we're looking to provide both small and large-scale grants, with those grants ranging from up to $1,000 or up to $3,000. These are specific to new programs or events, so we aren't, you know, funding the same programs or events every single year. It's really meant to help either one-time events or event that, you know, especially if we're looking at the larger scale, if someone's got an idea and this is kind of their inaugural year, how are we able to help support them in the hopes that then they are providing, you know, those events in future years. Our facade improvement program, as some of you may know, this program was started in 2010. The City of Rochester has been providing $100,000 a year for this program. The RDA acts as a facilitator of that program. Today, close to $500,000 have been awarded. To date, close to $1.7 million in improvements have resulted from the investments into the facade improvement dollars. This really, you know, you can see it through a lot of the facades that we see in downtown. A great example of one was Olive Juice Studios. If you've seen that facade, there was a great improvement to, you know, the entrance of that. And also hearing feedback from the property owner and the way that it greatly improved the energy efficiency too of that door. They talked about, you know, the window would just kind of fly through before that improvement was made, and now it's not only visually appealing, but also had larger impacts for that. We are working hard to make improvements to the program. You know, a lot has changed since 2012, and we're having conversations about, you know, for those who potentially are securing grants, how are we making sure we're being good stewards of those dollars? And so if buildings are drastically altered or demolished, how are we looking to collect some of those dollars back so those are able to go to other programs or projects that really do need those funds? I will be coming with a request to the city that we look at increasing that to $125,000 for the year for 2015. Really what we see is a continued need or I guess, a request for those dollars, and we'd like to make those available to the properties in downtown. And this is the example that I was talking about. So on your left there, you see the facade before, and then to the right, you see the facade after. So you see both an improvement to the actual storefront, as well as they had done a large rebrand too, to also really kind of up their name in terms of their logo. So a big piece for us here in 2015 is that we are up for a renewal within our special service district. So that's where the majority of the funding for the RDA comes from. I believe it's over 40% of our funding comes through the special service district dollars. We do see an additional annual contribution provided from the city as well as the Mayo Clinic. That's in the amount of $75,000 from each. So it's quite a process for us. I think it'll end up being about an 8-month process, and you all will be involved in that process. There's a number of hearings that go into it. But before that, we've been working with our past board chairs, as well as Terry's been very supportive of this process and answering a lot of different questions and providing clarification. If you look at the process, it's a lengthy one and there's a lot of components in it. What we are looking to propose, the board of directors had a conversation, a number of conversations about the renewal, and they tasked the special service district task force to seek feedback from our top 5 property owners on the following proposal. That it would be a 10-year renewal with an annual increase of a base of 4% and a cap of 8%, and then maintaining the same 44-block area. So this graph gives you a pretty good idea. It was put together really to give a snapshot of the proposal of the 4% base and the 8% cap. So over the last 10 years, the organization has seen an increase of our funding by 5% every year. So what this gives you is what that has looked like, but it also gives you an idea of, if we were using that 4% base and 8% cap, what it would look like what it would have looked like over the last 10 years. In the conversations about the funding model, really it was, how can we maintain a base of funding, but also as we see development in downtown, how are we ensuring that we're able to continue to provide all that we do at the RDA? So with that, I think it would be crazy to think about not having a cap, because as you see in the third column, that we've seen, or the tax capacity has seen as high of an increase of 15% and as low of a increase as negative 1.5. So if you look at that, it really shows the need for having at least a base, as well as being mindful of a cap. I don't think anybody likes to think about having an influx of a percentage upwards of 15%, because it doesn't give you really any way to manage that year to year. So a big piece of the renewal for us will be having conversations with the stakeholders. There's a big piece of the process, and the main component of the process is that we need to seek petitions from the property owners. And once those petitions are sought, then that's at the point that we come to the council and have a few hearings. And there's, as I said, it'll probably be about an 8-month process for us. This is our current 44-block map. This is what we'd be looking to maintain. As you all know, in conversations about DMC and maps, there's always, I think there's kind of endless conversations of what areas are included, what areas aren't. And the thought with the conversation about maintaining the 44-block area is it, really fits what we do. It's fairly achievable in servicing this current area, and opening the conversation to areas that either are excluded or included. Probably could go on for months. So really looking ahead, I think a big piece of it is the challenges and opportunities that exist with a changing downtown. I think we're all aware of what a changing downtown means, and that there's opportunities and challenges that would exist within that. I think with that comes, especially as we look at some of our events and some of our businesses, I think a great example for me is that, some of the uniquenesses that have been, one or two restaurants that's got a couple of restaurants. We now have a few different restaurant groups here in Rochester. So what does that mean with the way that we're providing service for an event like Thursdays? But I'm really optimistic and I'm excited about the challenges and the opportunities with our changing downtown. I think it's a great place to be and having the opportunity to have those conversations. With that, though, I think one of the things that's always been really great for the RDA is our strong core events. In 2014, we impacted approximately 368,000 people. So, I mean, just under 400,000, and I would think, you know, that's just an approximation, and I would think that we were probably above and beyond that. So if you think about all that we do with our events and all the people that we touch as an organization, I think it just, to me, it's pretty astounding. I think there's an opportunity to really increase that number as well in the future. I think you already have, but you'll continue to see us as an organization improving our processes and systems, really trying to streamline what we can and making sure that we're working well with our stakeholders as well as the public.
John Peterson is calling.
You'll continue to see a focus on our marketing of downtown, you know, as we strengthen our partnerships with NAO, RCBB, the Chamber, the EPA. A big part of that will be, as we're trying to get people into our downtown or to Rochester, it's marketing all the assets that our downtown has. And I really look forward to working with those organizations to highlight the asset that is our downtown. We as an organization will be focused on both our short-term and long-term strategic planning. I think we're all aware that, you know, you can have the planning, but the future of downtown Rochester also means that we need to be nimble and willing to make changes as we need to. So I think that's really important for us as an organization to maintain what we do well, but you know, figure out exactly where we plug in the best. Facilitation of the rentals for the Peace Plaza. I think I shared the last time that I was here, we've seen that number pretty much double every single year, which I think is great. I'd anticipate a high number of rentals for the plaza this year, both public and private. And I think we've done a lot of work to improve those processes and systems to make it more user-friendly for the renter. We've worked really closely with Aaron and the city as far as the permit process and making sure that we're positive partners and not delaying anything and getting the city what they need and the time that they need. So, you know, that's been a great program for us, and we've really taken pride in improving some of those systems there. And again, you know, I think it's strengthening our relationships and partnerships with the various organizations in this community. I said to the board this morning, I think for the RDA, it'll be continually navigating what items we're taking a leadership role on, where we're collaborating, and where we're supporting. I think that's going to be a big part of our future, and it's a future that I'm really excited about. So with that, you know, I thank you for the opportunity to be here today to share, you know, a little bit, I think, of a snapshot of the organization. And again, I would love to answer any questions that you might have or for the discussion about the organization.
All right, thank you. Questions for Jenna?
I have a question just about the facade improvement program, mm-hmm. and you're planning to request an additional $25,000 from the city. Mm-hmm. Do you have any other options for that $25,000, any other resources for the extra funds that you may be requesting?
As far as where those dollars are coming from, or?
No. You're asking for $25,000 increase. Mm-hmm. If that does not materialize, how will that affect your program?
I think it would just be that we would hope to maintain the $100,000 that is typically available on an annual basis. So, you know, as I stated, we've seen a tremendous amount of interest in the program, and it would be purely providing extra dollars that may be available for those applicants looking to secure those dollars. So in the event that was not awarded, we would work with, you know, hopefully that typical budget that we've had before.
No, I think it's a great program. We've made some great improvements, as you demonstrated with the olive juice program. Mm-hmm. The other question I had about funding was the one on page 5 under the special services district renewal. You get 40% through the special service district. Is that correct? And then 40% through the special services district. And then you have an annual contributions that are provided by Mayo, $75,000 from each. Does that remain the same request, or?
year over year, or what we'd be looking for this year?
Yes. You said additional annual contributions.
Yeah, so we received the special service district dollars, which is really the base of our funding, and then we have been fortunate enough to receive annual contributions from the city and from Mayo. Those are done on an annual basis. I believe we'll be in having a conversation probably later in 2015, because the bucket, if you will, that the $75,000 from the city has been coming from will have been, fully depleted at the end of this year. So that is done on an annual basis, but I know we'll also be in a unique position heading into 2016 with that access to the city and where that would exactly come from.
Do you request money from the county at all, or have they been approached, because they have a lot of the county people are within the city as well and utilize your service?
Believe we have, and if anybody could speak to that other, I don't believe so.
Might be worth checking it out.
It's
another resource.
We also funding also comes from some of our events, like Thursdays on First, that are revenue generators for us. Not all of our events do generate revenue or a substantial amount of revenue, but something like Thursdays through sponsorships as well as the vendor fees does support the work of the organization.
One last question, if I may. Have you provided additional seating spaces for people that may need it? At one time, there was some talk about some additional benches or putting benches downtown in strategic locations where they are not now.
I guess I can't speak to the benches specifically. I know with our events like Thursdays, there has been additional seating added around the stage areas, and being a little bit more strategic about what's available to individuals throughout the day. But the bench question, I can't.
Yeah, it seems like that was brought up before, and I never found out what the status of that was. But apparently, it's not high on the priority list right now. But it's something to think about.
If there's some more information that had been discussed prior to my start in May, I'd love to hear that.
Thank you.
The RDA has not supplied benches, but they have been supplied by the city under the tax abatement monies that we have accumulated every year.
Good, there's your answer.
Jenna, you might comment. I understand you're moving your offices.
We are. I think it's great that organizations like the Chamber and the RDA have been growing. So part of that was a request to kind of find some new office space. So hopefully in the next few weeks we will be located above what is Sante, which will now be Grand Rounds. So it will be some office space above there. So still very much centrally located in downtown.
Okay. Mr. Reska?
I was just going to say, just remind everyone that Jenna's referred to herself as starting in May, and so you're closing in on a year. But I'll also add that she came in with literally no staff. All the staff has been hired since she came in May, and literally a new board director, chair of the board, turned over too. So I see Dan's here too from the board. We've seen a lot of changes in this year. First year, I know today at our board meeting, we talked about kind of the seven core objectives that were set in 2009 and how a lot of those things have been already kind of accomplished and achieved. And we've talked about a strategic process to try to determine with DMC and some of the new initiatives that are coming across in the city, what are some things that maybe we want to target the RDA to focus on moving forward. With all the exciting times, I think, and the new staff and the new everything, that it allows the opportunity to kind of reload the gun again and take off and see where we're going. So, I guess maybe your first year, your impressions of coming in here. I know you're a local person, so it's nice to have you back in the community. But, what's it been for you as far as how it's gone and kind of how you've grown into the position and where do you see yourself going with the whole big situation right now, the whole big opportunity that's ahead of you?
I think that's a great question. It was definitely a busy start when I started in May, but, I think it really gave me the opportunity to just jump right in. I'm fortunate to have three great staff that I work with every single day who are just as passionate about, Rochester and specifically downtown, and we're eager to continue to move this organization forward. I think what you'll see coming out of the RDA office is a focus on, as I mentioned, improving our processes and procedures and really trying to be as consistent as possible. My hope is specifically with our events as well, you're seeing an improvement in the professionalism. We're very fortunate to have the partnerships that we do With the music department, the fact that, you know, Thursdays on First offers 52 free evening concerts, essentially, every single week, and having those resources are fantastic, and having that support is wonderful. I think, as I mentioned, it'll be really important for the RDA to both have a focus on what we do, but being nimble enough to kind of take on the challenges and opportunities that I think we'll all see in downtown Rochester. And as I mentioned, I think it'll be for us, as we work with the current organizations within Rochester, as well as potentially the future ones, you know, what will our relationship look like with the EDA? What will it continue to look like with DMC, with the Chamber, with the RCBB, as we look to bring more people here as visitors? So I think for me, it's really being focused on the task at hand, but be also having that foresight to take on some opportunities and to be creative. I think that's what we as an office are really excited about, or what are those things that are going to stand up, that's going to put Rochester on the map, that's going to have, you know, us be the place where young people are wanting to move to and start their lives in, you know, 10 to 15 years. And I made a comment at the last DMC meeting where, it's not about any of us in the room right now. It's really about, you know, those young people who are in school right now and who in the future will be considering where they're going to live. And so, some of those are going to be the tough conversations, and we might not all agree on everything, but hopefully what the overall focus is that we're improving, we're making a Rochester where people can be proud, both current and in the future. And I think if that means that, we truly are that place to be, I think that's something to be really proud of. And I'm also very excited to continue to focus on what downtown truly means and how we're marketing that. I think there's truly an opportunity to be competitive with other downtowns, not only in the state, but around the country. And I know that the RDA will have a big task in that, and being involved with marketing all it is downtown.
Okay. Mr. Campion?
First, John, thank you for the presentation. I thought we did a really good job of covering a lot of the important aspects of what you guys offer to Rochester in terms of return on the investment we do here. The one thing, as you talked, that I underlined and wrote down, because I think it's so important, is nimbleness. And I think you said it a couple times, and certainly as a council, we understand how important that nimbleness is now more than ever, with what I like to think of being a pretty significant change coming forward, possibly for downtown. So a few of the things you hit on, I think, that are important. You talk about short and long-term strategic planning. I think it's also important that as part of that strategic plan, and I know that you guys will do the best you can to bubble that back up for the council, because I think you serve an important role as kind of a canary in the mine shaft about what's the challenge for delivering events downtown, what's the challenge for bringing those people downtown. So I'm excited to hear that that's taking place and that you kind of see that as a fundamental responsibility. The other side is, I'm really excited to hear the growth of the rental spaces downtown, and I'm glad to hear you've kind of identified, and your organization has identified, how important that is, and that we really master the skills around doing those rentals, around managing those rentals, because I'm guessing with possible public infrastructure investment, the likes of which downtown hasn't seen in a long time, the opportunities to build rentable spaces, to talk about that, is going to be there, and we're going to need a core of knowledge on how to do that and execute that. That's going to be really important. So otherwise, thanks for the report.
All right. Anyone else? Mr. Bilbo? Yeah.
Just want to say that it's been a real pleasure to work with Jenna. We've had some long conversations, and I think when we talk about the downtown area and develop consistency in the way things are operated downtown, be it events or just how things happen anyhow, we've seen a major push in different type of dining downtown than we've seen in the past. We've also seen a huge expansion. 4 or 5 years ago, all we had was right around the Peace Plaza. Now we have the entire downtown pushing out and about. So it's good to see that they're looking at what areas they can handle. I think it's a good idea to keep the 44 block area versus it's a workable, it's very active, and I think it's very nice. It's good for me to hear that she works very close with our staff. Her entire staff does. She was on TV this morning, out there in that frigid, way to go. But I think it's important that we see that the RDA is working very close with the other government entities downtown, as well as the businesses, to try to come up with some consistency and fairness. And that's what they're trying to push throughout the entire downtown. I think that's important. So thank you, Jenna. Okay. Mr. Russell?
I was in a rural community last weekend, and I heard him talking about social ice and when is it, and you know, are you going? And I heard the other person go, "Yeah, I love it. It's a lot of fun. We're going." And the other person, "Yeah, we are too." And it just kind of made me capture a moment of how much, you know, we mean to the whole region area. And you know, I think one of the things that through all these areas of Thursdays on First and social ice, and that we have had our growing pains. We have had the challenge of capacity coming in and maybe not, you know, figuring out how to deal with electrical hookups and restrooms and some of the challenges that have come. But it's been really a positive thing if you think about all the growth that's gone on and all the impact in the downtown. So, you know, I think the things are working, and I know that you've had challenges and you continue to have them as we grow, but, you know, when you really hear that, it really makes you realize that it's working. So,
yeah. And I think that's an exciting opportunity. You know, I think really realizing the community that we service, you know, it is our downtown stakeholders and those businesses, it's the visitors, it's the, you know, the residents. And I think that, you know, to Ed's point, it does... you know, there's a lot of uniqueness to it. You know, we hear some things from businesses, they really like this. We hear some things from the residents or the visitors, and they really like this. And I think it's a great opportunity for us to kind of take all of that and see what we can make the most out of. So I think it's great to hear that we are providing that to communities outside of Rochester, and it is a regional thing. And I think we'll look to even magnify that more and look to pull from even outside of the region, you know, as this area continues to grow and as we look to grow our events. And I think we've got a lot of great things to offer. It's just a matter of getting that word out there, too, and we're excited about that.
Well, I think the word's out, and I think you have a couple. I mean, as Ed said, you know, I've heard endlessly about social ice, and I think it's a good example of a signature event that if your city has one of those and you embrace it and... You know, I think there's a number on this list already of things that people look forward to, and I just think it's a very valuable asset for our community.
The weather's going to be good.
Mr. Wojcik.
One of the, you know, I appreciate what's going on downtown. I think it speaks to the, you know, the desired conditions for young people in general. The first director of the RDA was kind of famous for saying yes to anything that anyone ever wanted, and I think future directors have had to deal with the consequences of that. One of the frustrations that I hear a lot, particularly with Thursdays on First, is the lack of a fair method for allocating space to all people that pay into the district. In those events, there are certain businesses that they always get their prime location every time. Are we doing anything towards moving to a system that is fair to all parties within the DMC district so we don't do these special favors for one business and not another?
As it stands right now, still the majority, the main type of business that can be involved in Thursdays is largely just restaurants.
Yes, right.
I think if we were to have a conversation on altering that, it would need to be a larger conversation on, you know, what things then would be altering kind of the main intent of the event. I think... you know, if you're looking at having businesses other than artists and craft vendors that need to make at least 80% of their product, that does open the door, you know, to a different conversation. I'm not saying that that's completely...
Okay, you actually hit on it. It's the restaurants. I mean, here's the deal is that all of these restaurants in the core district are paying in, and some of them, due to these legacy promises that were made years ago, have these prime locations, and it makes other ones, you know, unhappy that they don't get the same fair considerations. And what I'm asking for is I want a process whereby every restaurant that's paying into this district has the same ability to secure whatever spaces or some sort of fair manner of doing this, because what's going on right now isn't fair. It's fair. It's great for some businesses, and it's completely unfair to others, but all these businesses are paying in, and I want to see some progress towards making this fair for everybody.
I've been working closely with the policy committee, and we have got a number of city staff that also serve on that committee. Just the other week, and it's something that I alluded to earlier in my presentation, is you know, some of the uniquenesses that were those one-off uniquenesses specifically to restaurants aren't uniquenesses anymore. We've got a number of different you know, restaurant groups now, or groups that have more than one restaurant. The conversation at the policy level is that this is something that we will need to continue to address. We're going to look to work with the with the restaurant specifically, do I think there's going to be a perfect formula? No. I think there's always going to be some gray, but that gets the piece about trying to improve some of our processes is that, do I think there's a better way? Yes. We went to an entirely online system this year. That removed the need for people to stand outside of our office from 2 in the morning until we started at 9. The majority, I would say almost 100% of the feedback that we heard about that switch to an online system was completely positive. So does it lend itself for furthering the conversation to be as fair and equitable as possible? Yes. It's just going to be, I think, navigating how we get there.
And I appreciate that because what I'm going to look at in evaluating whether or not we're being fair to all businesses is those locations which restaurants have expressed to me are the most desirable locations. If it's the same restaurant in that location every week, as it has been in certain cases for years, then I know that we're not serious about being fair to all of the people who are in this district. And that's my thing, is I don't want to pick winners and losers. Anything that's taking place in the public right away, I want to be fair to all these people that are paying into our district. And feel free to disagree with me on that, but...
I guess I'd have to have a discussion with you on what places these are and where they're at and how that works, because I think what the RDA has worked very hard at, especially since Jen has been here, is fairness and trying to straighten out the policies to make them fair and equitable across the board. So,
do you agree then that fair is if there was a desired place?
I'd have to find out what are your time anyone would have a desired spot.
We didn't turn anybody away this year, did we?
We're still accepting applications up until March, and there's a magic number of 29 restaurant spaces that we have. So we have been fortunate enough to allow all of the SSDs that have been wanting a space to have a space. We are looking at, you know, placing we allow any vendor to suggest or provide where they'd like to be located, and then we do our best to place them, you know, at that spot or as close to that spot as possible. Specifically with the restaurants, we've worked to, you know, have a conversation of how close can we get them to right outside of their door so there's not a lot of excess hauling.
And specifically to your question, if two restaurants want the same space, how do we resolve that in a fair manner?
Well, and then I would hope the RDA would be
if there were
policy procedures to do that. But even now, there's restaurants that come into the area that aren't even in the RDA district.
Yep, I understand
that. They're allowed to come in periodically. So, again, I'd have to know more on what you're saying and what before I would agree to that.
Yeah, and I think we got to give Jenna, this is her first time through this, and as well as staff. I think we got to give her a little time to work through this because I think that, you know, these are things that you're aware of. And I think that kind of trying to come up with some solutions is a lot easier after you've experienced it once. Right.
And they are working on it.
And that's what I want to see this summer is because, you know, those are the complaints that I've gotten is there are restaurants that want to be in certain areas. But because so-and-so years ago promised that I could always have this spot, I always have this spot. And that's the kind of garbage we got to get away from.
And that's a part of the conversation, I think. You know, it's not just specific to Thursdays and vending spaces. I'm sure many of you have heard any specific topic where it's, you know, it's got a historical component to it. And I think it's, you know, being mindful of that and respectful of that, but working to know that as we continue to see changes, my staff and I were asked to do the event the same way that it was when it started. We wouldn't have seen the success that we do, and we won't see success in the future. So I think it'll be continuing to balance it and have some conversations and see how we can best work with those challenges.
All right. Anything else?
I'll just make a comment.
Yes, ma'am.
I love the concerts. They're not all for the young people. I've seen a few do-si-dos down there, too. So, I mean, it is a very inclusive. It's not generation-specific down there, and that is appreciated by many people in the community. So thank you for that.
I know Steve's been working very hard on the lineup for this year. We've been working very closely on that. You know, I think to see the mix of entertainment that we do on a Thursday, it's both international, it's regional, it's local. So again, to be able to provide as many free concerts, you know, every single week as we do and to have that partnership, we're very fortunate.
Okay. One thing I did try to get a drink from Social Ice, but it was so crowded that I couldn't stand in the weather and wait for the young people to get out of the way so I could get in there. But it's great. Thank you for all you're doing.
See the ice, jump on the trolley, and enjoy all of our establishments.
Thanks.
All right. Well, thank you, Jenna, for the report. I know we're all looking forward to social ice. Some of us are more so looking forward to that June weather. So.
Absolutely. I would like to thank the council, as I did when I came last year, on your continued support and your acknowledgement of all that we do in the transition that we have been going through. I would encourage you, any of you, if you're hearing either from constituents with questions or concerns, my door is always open, and I encourage you to reach out if there's anything that we can do.
All right.
Can I ask one other question? You've moved above Sante's, above the old Sante's. Now, do you have walk-in clients, and are you accessible to your clients and customers?
We will be working with the public if there's specific requests or needs. We're more than knowing that we will work with those individuals. You know, that's a bit of a challenge with an older building.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, thank you once again. Moving on to our second topic is a discussion of a process for reuse of city buildings. This was my topic, so let me introduce what I was talking about here. The examples I used in my memo to the council specifically related to the current senior center location, the armory, as well as the current fire station number 2, which is soon to be vacated, the one located by Silver Lake. And I only use those as examples, but what I was hearing through the community, and I suspect others were too, is that there's some interest on the part of multiple groups that would have some interest in utilizing that space. But what I was also hearing is that how that interest was demonstrated ran the gamut. I had some individuals that would simply send an email that, I'm interested in this space. And we have other people that were putting together rather formal business plans and so forth. One caveat here, after I sent the memo out, I think I want to distinguish, because when I talk about repurposing city property, I wasn't necessarily talking about how we dispose of city land. And I know there's, for example, the land along Highway 52 and 2nd Street. If you want to have that conversation, we can, but that's not what I was talking about. I was talking about how we repurpose existing buildings that the city would choose to retain ownership. And the thing that I would be looking for, just to start the conversation, is I want to make sure that we have an equitable process that we use. From my own perspective, I think that any time that we're going to make city property available, I'm okay with that, but any organization, any use of that building, what I'm going to be looking for is that business case. Is it a purpose that is sustainable, that can make use of that building? The last thing I really want to get into is a situation where we're not only providing the space, but we're also potentially being asked to subsidize whatever operation is occurring there. I feel that any group that utilizes our space should have, as I say, a sustainable business plan, and that is justifiable. So, two things. I'm looking for some consistency so we can communicate to the community. This particular property is available. We're going to use an RFP process. We're going to use whatever so that everyone understands what we'll be looking at and what sort of criteria we'll be looking at. So with that, I'll open it up. But again, we've got a couple of properties coming up. I know the Park Board has first dibs on the fire station, and so they might wish to comment on that. The Senior Center won't really come available for probably a year. So I think that's why I wanted to get this discussion going now, while people have plenty of time to consider their options. Comments, questions? Mr. Logic.
In the interest of consistency, and I'm fine leaving the land disposal question for another day because it is not really the same thing. Ultimately, on both of them, it's just we got to be fair to everybody when we do these. My issue is, one of the things you brought up is, and I agree with you, we want to get whoever's going to be using these properties potentially in the future, we don't want to be providing them an operating subsidy either. At the same time, the policy we as a body have established is that those nonprofits operating in city-owned buildings, it is our intent to cover their operating expenses. that being the Art Center, the Civic Theater, and we're moving towards that with the Senior Center. And I just point that out because we're kind of creating a little bit of a dividing line right there. And I think that there's enough interest in potentially future sites that we might be able to get somebody that is self-sustainable. But I'd only point out that our own policy, then we're going to start getting into, well, for this organization, this organization, and this organization, this is our policy. But for now, this organization, this is our new policy. So, and I just bring that up that, you know, I just want us to be aware of that. I can handle things that are a little bit complicated too. So, it's okay.
All right, Mr. Campion.
In the line of questioning, I am completely in favor of an RFP project. I think that approach to what we're doing is extremely important to first make it known to everyone that these spaces are being considered, and two, to kind of coalesce all the ideas on a similar timeline versus getting one and then having people react to that, getting a different one, and having them kind of potentially leapfrogging each other in terms of what they think is feasible. On the other side, I'm not real sure about the idea of kind of focusing this solely on self-sustaining uses. I think Councilmember Wojcik brought up a few of the ones that do not necessarily cover their costs today, and I think it might be a bit prohibitive to say we're never going to get in a case of offering a subsidy to some organization to come in. And so while I think I like the idea of a business plan, I think it's an important aspect of a presentation to talk about the financial sustainability of a project. I don't think I'd necessarily rule out uses that talked about an interim need for financing to help them get started, to bootstrap an organization that could eventually be a very fundamental piece of the community. So I don't know that I'm necessarily on board with a strict, you must be cash flow positive, you must, be able to sustain yourself. And I think, to me, the devil would be in the details there, probably.
Quick comment for those that attended. I just want to be clear that there's been no preconceived plan for the two buildings that I mentioned. I just use those as examples because they'll come soon. So if anyone thinks that the decision has already been made on either of those, that wouldn't be true.
Yeah, and I think, to expand on what you said, I mean, I think we're talking about potentially an RFP process, and I think that could be one of the components. I assume we'll advertise criteria, and if you're self-sustaining, that would probably be a criteria that might put you a little higher, but without necessarily just qualifying an organization that did need some kind of startup subsidy. But I think it certainly could be one of the criteria.
I agree, Mr. Bilderbeck.
I agree with Mr. Campion. I think an RFP process would be a good way to do it. I think a group coming forward with a business plan, so if there's expected shortages or expected assistance from the city, that's known up front. I think that's fine. I agree. I don't think that disqualifies them, and it puts them on equal ground. I agree with Mr. Wojcik on the fact that everybody should have an equal opportunity, and I believe that RFP process would do that. So I believe that makes good sense. But again, how we make that decision, when we finally make that decision, somebody's going to be unhappy because there are many groups already looking at these buildings or making some statement of the fact they want it. But an RFP process, a timeline, so everything has to be done at one time, I think is a fair way to do it.
Okay. Other questions or comments? One of the things I'd like to do, since the fire station will be the first one to come available here not too soon a time, is would Mr. Whitman or Mr. Nigber, would you care to comment on any particular strategy for that building?
Sure. We've discussed this. I just take a minute. Mike is familiar with the building, and we had the chance just a few weeks ago to walk the building with the staff from the fire department. And one of the things we've discussed all along is we've looked at taking over that building in the inventory of park facilities is first look at our own needs and where we might be falling short. And the building, of course, is equipped to handle heavy equipment, and it would be ideal for some of our maintenance operations. It's got the electrical, we have a lot in common with the fire department. You think of big trucks and ladders and things. So that would be you know, basically a turnkey operation for us if we expanded maintenance.
What's not commonly known is that we run our recreation program out of that fire station, at least in parts of the fire station during the summertime as well. And again, that's lost, that'd be lost component for our use already that we've already currently utilizing. The other thing to keep in mind too is, and I was going to point this out earlier, Randy, is that as you're looking at disposing of city properties or reusing, using the RFP process, it's a fine process, but would you not want to consider what uses might be available internally first before you say, boy, your community, what are the uses for it when we have these inside first? Because there are needs out there, to be honest with you, whether it's park or rec or code works or planning or any place else. I mean, they're out there.
Mr. Campy, any other questions?
I'll yield to Mr. Bilderback.
Yeah, I guess my feeling is there's sometimes bigger and better uses of property than just turning it back into the city properties. I think we, again, I have no problem with them coming forth and asking and looking for and having purposes and needs and wants, but that I don't think that should necessarily lock our hands to say, okay, another city department wants it, so it should go to them versus some of these other groups that might have some abilities to use that. That's just my feeling.
Well, I'll give you a good example. There's an old water chlorination plant on 3rd Avenue Northwest, you know, along the river, just south of the apartment building. What's it called? The Riverside, I guess, is up there area. And it's an old building. You drive it by, you wouldn't even notice it. But that's owned by, or it's operated by, water reclamation plant. They're now done using that. And we've talked about with them because they link to our core on the entire river. And again, having that property sold or disposed of would be, a short-sighted. It's not a public asset that's out there for the community good. The building is out there as well. So.
And I'm not saying to sell or dispose of, that's another topic.
Right.
We're talking about reusing a property. And again, I think if they have good value and good need, they can come forward and ask that. But I still believe that, you know, it doesn't hurt them to go through the same process that we're asking the other business to go through too. Because this is going to come back on our payroll, and just shifting it from fire to park. And ultimately, it comes out of the taxpayers' dollars. So if they're going to go through that process, we should look at that process all the way across the board. It should be equal again. Not just that because we're a city department, we automatically get it.
But I think the exciting thing is I want to keep us open to ideas, specifically the fire station. I've heard about the park department use, but I'm also hearing ideas like a potential sort of an athletic facility. I had someone approach me that it could be a neat location for a winery along the paths and so forth. So really some interesting ideas out there that I wouldn't have anticipated, so I want to be open to that. Other comments, or did you have more comments, Paul?
Well, the one thing I wanted to say about us looking at it for our maintenance needs, and just to focus on that, it's a need. It's not that we look at that as that's a great place to, you know, move some trucks into. We're really working at capacity at the shop, the current location, and I think, you know, if we were look at the cost of what it would take for us to expand, and here we have this facility available. That's an opportunity that we're looking at.
Mr. Adkins or Mr. Quenville, maybe clarify something for me. That particular structure, is it the park board that first has to make a decision or gets the first crack at that, or is it city property like any other city property and everyone would make their case to the city council?
You're talking structure now, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Comes to you.
Okay. All right, Mr. Ruskin.
Well, and I'm not too sure we could come up with a mixed use, and a funny thing to talk about for mixed use, but you know, we've got some friends here from Boxing that have been displaced, and they're looking for a new home, and you know, can you park trucks in there and utilize that for some reason for the city, and also, you know, open it up as maybe an idea for recreational purposes for some of the area that's looking for, you know, that they will never be able to afford to build a place, but boy, it certainly puts a lot of young people that are looking for things to do, gives them, you know, an option. So, you know, is that, how would we do that? I mean, I'm kind of struggling with how do we get the word out there if we're going to ask for an RFP process, how do we get the word out there to the people that might be interested in submitting an RFP? And then thus, when the, you know, could we have an option that says, well, maybe we do A, B, or a combination of A and B, because you know I know that, that was brought to my attention too. Would that be a possibility? And so that's why we're here talking about it. But you know, would you be open to something like that too, Paul, where you could park the trucks in there, and yet maybe there's a basement that could be used for some secondary purpose too?
Well, the fire department's doing that now, and I just think as long as we're not, it's not a safety issue, and we're not, and we have room to do that, we'd be open to it.
Mr. Newman?
Yeah, if you have, in this case, they have a real need for it, you may want to at least let them flesh out what they might be able to do in the building before you decide to go up for an RFP, because if that, you know, if they come back to you with something, you say clearly, yes, this is a need, you know what I mean? No sense going through the RFP process. If there's something, you know, you may say, well, that's not clear enough to us, so we will consider other uses. But you might also say that's clear enough to us that we don't need to go through the whole RFP effort. So that's my only comment. Let them flesh out more specifically what their needs are and see if you really want to do an RFP on this.
Okay. Mr. Campion?
Paul, so is it the location of the firehouse that makes it an ideal candidate for the Parks Department?
Well, it is centrally located, but it's just the fact that we're really at capacity.
And there's no capacity like at these other facilities we've built for like public works or anything like that.
Mike can speak to that. We also, and why don't you highlight Essex Park?
There's a couple things going on in the park system right now. The fire station could sit on parkland. It was developed with parkland initially on. The building was built for a fire station. Yes, it's true. I guess I view that being differently, but Mr. Atkins is the attorney, he knows best. In that perspective, the idea is that right now, in our current park operations facility, in summertime operations, we have about 60 seasonal staff members, along with the Legion in our current building, along with our park operations permanent staff at that site, and we have people sitting out in the garage trying to do work, and it's really not a very cost-effective way to do business. I mean, it's pretty poor, actually. Is there a location at other spots around town? I don't believe so.
Okay.
That's the challenge we've got. Yeah. Political works out at north side. You now have police officers out there. I think there's 20 staff members out there for the police department that are out there. Again, the fire station is building a new site out there because they need their growth area to change as well. As part of the challenge we've got upwards of $500,000 to $250,000 to put equipment sitting outside every day.
Can I just want to tag on, Mike? You said there's 20 police officers up there, but you didn't say that you guys couldn't go in there. I'm wondering why you have you looked at the public works? I mean, that's a big facility. Have you guys looked at the opportunities that maybe are there?
I've been told that they're pretty well full up on staff here.
Okay.
And again, is that true? I have not been out there.
Okay.
So.
Sorry, I just wanted to make sure.
Okay. Ms. Means.
Well, I really think that we need to take care of our own. And so if there is a need in the park or in public works or whichever organization within the city has a need and they can document that need and demonstrate it, I think we should have them submit their request. But I honestly can't see them competing with some other organization when we have cars parked outside or when we don't have an adequate space. That's my opinion. I would take care of my own family first, if I could. Secondly, in terms of the city-owned buildings, I think about, and I may be biased on this, and I'm okay with that, but the Art Center and the Civic Theater and the Mayo Civic Center, for that matter, are all part of our cultural district, and even though they may not have the funds to be self-sustaining, and they do ask for subsidies from the city, I think it's a great value to this community and for those that are visiting in this community to have that as a resource for them. And so I know I'm saying everybody else, but if the city needs it, the property, or if it involves anything in our cultural district, because that is a clear asset for us.
Mr. Wojcik?
If we are addressing a need that we will have to pay additional tax dollars to address later, it seems like the decision should be pretty straightforward at that point. But we are the third largest city in the state of Minnesota. We're one of the most vibrant, growing communities in the upper Midwest. And I'd like to check our resource needs for the Parks Department against the Parks Master Plan. But we're not there yet. And I think this speaks to the need that we have got to get a plan in place, because we should have some idea how we're going to meet your facility needs for the next 30 years. You know, and we're just not there yet. And I think this, so between now and the time where we do something with this property, if we could get that done, that'd be great.
If you're authorizing me to do that, I'll go right ahead.
We give you a nice budget every year.
Mr. Campion.
Council Member Means, your opinion is not lost on me, but I'm finding myself maybe going a bit counter to it. I would hate to stifle the opportunity to hear about some of the creative ideas for reuse of these buildings. And part of me knows that the fire building is not going to fill their needs for 20 years. So if they're going to come, and I hope that's not news to anyone, that eventually that building will get filled up. It's not built to be, a storage utility building. I dread the idea that we turn off our receptors to what the community thinks are cool, or interesting, meaningful uses of the buildings, especially at a time when we're going to be having a lot of new community members. We're going to have a lot of need for more stuff. It's going to be a challenging time, but I do think it's still valuable to maybe, preface the community will know that we're weighing, tax implications here. It's a tax implication to talk about that. So.
Mr. Hickey?
Yeah, so I mean, I think, the point Gary brought up is a good one. So I think we do want to keep our options open, but I think would make good sense to look internally first. You certainly wouldn't want to advertise this to outside groups and say it's a possibility and then kind of pull the rug out on them and say, nah, never mind, we're not really going to do that. So, I mean, I think we do want to keep all our options open, and I think ultimately the RFP process may be the correct one, but I do think we need to take that good internal look first before we move forward.
With that in mind, is there a sentiment that the Park Department should proceed with, come forward with some sort of a compelling case, a use for that building that we could consider? And then at that point, we decide, there might be some other options to address that need, maybe that's still viable to go through an RFP process, or maybe the case is so compelling that we say, right, that would be a good, justifiable repurposing of that building. I'm open to that idea. Mr. Wojcik, then Mr. Ruska.
Well, here's my suggestion. Ultimately, it's going to be our decision, but why don't we put this on the park board for their recommendation to us as well? Whether they want to use it internally, whether they want to pursue other facilities, or whether they think it should be repurposed.
All right. Let them weigh. I guess that's part of what I was suggesting. So,
yeah.
Mr. Ruska.
Well, I guess I understand all this talk, but I guess Mr. Hickey says, lay it out there for somebody to pull the rug out from under, but if we don't listen to what opportunities are out there, we might not know what the best purpose and best use for it might be. So I don't know if we need to have a full-fledged RFP for everything, but I'd certainly like to have, maybe we have a six-month time where we let the word out there that this building is going to be up for use, as it starts to come to the end of its useful life, is what its present purpose was. Then we can hear what opportunities are there, and then maybe we look more in depth at which one of those makes the most sense. I don't like the idea of us not thinking about maybe what could be, and just stopping right there and saying, we're going to park vehicles in there, and that seems like a good use. There might be something better. There might be a combination of all. And I don't think that, as long as we're not asking people to put a whole lot of effort and a huge amount of resources into it, to hear what maybe is out there would make some sense to me. And so you have that window to say, here's some different options, and we review them. And if we see a few that there that make sense, then we can get back to that group and say, we really like your deal here. Could you come forward with more detail? And it might not happen, but at least then we know what's out there. Because I think right now, if we just go with this option, we might not know what our use is, like you say, depending, but without even the word getting out there.
Well, in the nomenclature that I'm used to, it can be a two-step process. One is what I'll call a request for information, which is generally high level. You're looking for high level information. And then presumably if you go deeper, further, then an RFP is actually much more detailed. I want to see numbers, I want to see business plan, I want to see so forth. But a request for information is just that, kind of a high level intent or purpose that might suffice to express that need, at least articulate it and then to give us something to ponder. Who's next? Ms. Kamin?
I was just going to comment, and I still, what I said earlier, I still believe that's taking care of your own, but could not the park department then come forward with some pros and cons about to justify the need and the use for this facility and what it would cost to, you know, replace, you know, to buy a new one or to build a new one to fulfill their needs, not only short term, but at least midterm as well.
Well, and I think we are suggesting that we direct the park board to go through that analysis and come back with some information. But what I'm also hearing is that we don't necessarily want to wait for that it would be permissible to kind of extend an invitation to others that might be interested to come forward with a short, you know, request for information, just to express interest in some fashion that we could take a look at. Mr. Hickey?
Yeah, no, I really like that process you've outlined, because my concern, of course, was if you put them through a detailed, obviously there'd be some expense and some, quite a bit of time and expense involved in a detailed RFP, whereas what you're proposing, I think, we'd be able to gather some information without having groups put out too many resources.
Okay. Other, Mr. Bilbao?
Mr. Quenville, so the area out by the water reclamation plant, that blue building is empty, and that's the city's?
Yeah, that was built in the 1970s. It's kind of a boondoggle as a chlorine injection facility because there was a lot of odors coming off the sewage treatment plant at that time, so they built this chlorine injection facility right off west, right off the, I think, 3rd Avenue or whatever that is.
But the size of that is much larger.
Well, it's sitting on that hillside.
And right.
It hasn't been used. It hardly was ever used. It was, like I said, a boondoggle. It wasn't functional. It never was.
Is that before you
served a purpose? I was
no,
here.
No,
it involves running water.
And so it's something you could get rid of, I'm sure.
I'm just saying, is there a value or a use of that building? I mean, if we leave it just sit there and doing nothing.
I've never viewed that. It was
in the property.
It's sitting on that hillside. And I guess if there is some reuse for it, we could advertise and get rid of it.
Well, I don't know if we want to sell it because it's something we'll probably need in the future, but somebody, if they could use it versus sitting there empty, you know, if we could get some rent off it or what have you to use that facility.
Well, probably you should want to go take a look inside there. I mean, it just was a concrete place to store some chlorine.
It's not that
cylinders.
Large, is it? What kind of square footage? It's not
about
that
1,600 square feet is all it is.
Yeah. I'm sorry, how much?
13.
16.
It's something we probably shouldn't market if there's anybody that's interested in. It has a connection to that large sewer line, but I'm not sure that's going to serve any purpose to anybody.
Right, but don't we now also own that blue? It used to be a car dealership up on
37th Street.
37.
But that's for the future expansion of the sewage treatment
plant.
Right,
but there's nothing active going on in that building now, is there?
No.
Okay, Mr. Campion?
Yeah. So Parks Master Plan, I hate to get off, I know this is, but this is tangentially related. What's the price tag? Can you give me an estimate?
Other communities I'm aware of, it's been about $80,000 to $100,000.
That's expensive.
That's a ballpark. Mitzi, I don't know you've been recently through that process.
I think the ballpark that Mr. Whitman threw out is in the range of what we talked about, including with the comprehensive plan update. The comp plan will include some higher level evaluation of overall park system and open space needs, because that has a pretty significant impact on overall land use patterns and development. And that assessment needs to be at least at a high level part of the comp plan update.
And the reason I bring...
We talked about the value of having a more detailed master plan for the parks department and all park facilities, and it's something that would really be of benefit to the whole community. So you have that vision and you have that blueprint for making the strategic investments over time.
And I know the budgets are always hard, but I think it's going to be a challenge to decipher the long-term needs of the park. And it would be a shame. I guess we could revisit the use of the building if the needs of the park outgrew the building and they had to move, but it would be kind of a shame to move them in there, you know, have an expense of moving them in there and then have to pay it again. So I guess I'm a proponent of finding a way to figure out how we can generate a study. You know, I think that's an important aspect of figuring out how we're going to fund this parks department. I think we're going to find out, you know, the CIP funding is not going to get us to where we need to go, and we're going to have to start taking a serious look at, you know, what are we going to do in the long run. And I know it didn't make the budget, and I know that's the prerogative of the council, but I think it's hard to hear that they need this building, and, you know, are they going to, the next building come back, and is it going to be the same thing? And eventually, you know, are all our buildings going to internal use, and we're not kind of building that culture of, you know, embracing some of those more creative uses? And it's not that I'm about spending a whole bunch of extra money, but I do like to.
I do want to pick up, though, on what Mr. Bildebeck was talking about. The particular building he's talking about on 37th Street, that's a building currently unoccupied. The water treatment plant, I understand that, but that's not imminent. We're talking about a building that has garage doors, surface parking. I mean, it was a garage automotive service. So one of the options, I think, could be to consider using that at least. I mean, gosh, it's going to be how many years before we consider a water treatment?
It'll be a long time.
So that could be a viable north side utility building for the next decade easily, which would buy us some time to perhaps consider a more appropriate facility. So, and it's sitting empty, available now. Mr. Quimble.
A question for you on the current fire station number 2. The fire department moves out in April. Do they retain the responsibility for the maintenance operational costs until you assign it to somebody else? Mm-hmm.
I would say yes. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what that means other than keeping the heat on a little bit.
Well, somebody's going to maintain it.
Yeah, it's going to somebody's
keep
budget.
Right, right. And that sort of stuff. Right. They've been doing it.
Should be.
I thought we put on the administrative part.
Yes.
Yeah, come out of administration. Yeah. Like
double the cost of it.
So, so what about that idea? If we're going to ask the park board to consider this particular building, the fire station number 2, what if they also, is it viable to ask them to look at the 37th Street building? Any reason not to?
Right.
Mr. Johnson?
I believe Public Works has done a study on that building, and I think there's some issues with the foundations as far as its settling. I mean, there's parts of it that are, I don't believe it was worth renting out again or continuing to rent it out. So I believe there's some structural issues with that building that Public Works has reviewed it with somebody and said, made the determination it's not worth it.
Could you find out, Mr. Quenville? Because, I mean, it seems silly to leave a building sit there and wait for it to fall down.
Not worth it to rent it or not worth it to use it?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
I was thinking the same thing.
All right. So, Mr. Quenville, if you could check
with
Public Works to see if there was some, because it doesn't make any sense to me.
I had a question further on the park board versus their authority versus. Now, that sits on park land. My understanding was the park board has the ability to determine the usage of the park property. Is that correct?
Yes.
But not the building?
Correct.
That's why I asked to clarify.
I'm not sure what Mr. Nigrum might say.
He's still working on his law degree. Yeah.
Did you stay at Holiday Inn Express?
We're going to court. I'm taking Terry. Okay.
All right, so as we try to wrap this up, what's your pleasure? Where would we like to go with this? Any specific ideas?
Yeah, I really like the idea of the two-stage approach. I think what we should do is set explicit timelines for the application process. So maybe it's 90 days for the high level one, and once we kick it off, and that's another, I don't know, 90 days after, once we've winnowed it down to proposals we want to see more information about. But I think I would really like to kick that process off and consider city uses at the same time, because I do think it's all what we do is a balance. It's a balance of the tax implications of giving use away and versus keeping it internal. But I think that's a good solution to the problem.
One thing we could do is we could propose a draft for a request for information, exactly what sorts of things we would be looking for. Something for the council to consider, and then if that's acceptable once we settle on that, then we could send that out. In the meantime, there's nothing to stop the park board from picking up on what we've said today and start to consider a proposal for either of those two buildings, subject to building safety, being a part of that conversation. You know, obviously it's not going to come available until this spring, but I would like to see some options, you know, by early summer from the park board and others.
It'd be interesting for us to have a little current asset sheet or something of lands and buildings that we have in the city and when it might become available. We talk about the current senior castle that's downtown. I mean, that has a date where eventually that'll be emptied out, and, you know, so people can also do some planning with that idea, you know, and you mentioned some, you know, building here and a building there. It's kind of like, what do we have laying around in the city? Are there other buildings out there and other facilities that are available? And if so, maybe there's somebody that would like to take that opportunity and come forward with something that makes a lot of sense. So I'm just wondering if an all-inclusive list of all the things we have with some, you know, where we might have some dates where we'd be open to requests for information or whatever helps the city to kind of know what's out there for opportunities.
Buildings and land.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
I would like to discuss land at a future date, because I've gotten a lot of pushback from how we dispose lots from neighborhoods. I think that there's a lot of interest out there in notification being a little bit more clear, but today's not the day. So.
And I think the bottom line is we're all trying to find out what's the best use for the community for all these different assets, and if we don't know what we have and don't put a plan together, we probably won't get there.
That's right. Okay, so we'll try to put together an inventory of some city assets. We've given the park board some direction on what they should be doing over the next 90-plus days, and we'll work on a draft that we could issue to the community for those that might be interested in expressing interest in use of some of these facilities. So it's mostly fact-finding and data gathering so that we make the best decision on the use of public asset. Anything else, then, on that topic?
Just wonder, when you get the buildings that are in the land that's available, is there no future plan use for that, for the land, or?
That would be part of it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I believe we have a planning director or something to say.
Right, your comprehensive plan actually might identify needs and uses for those properties, so there is a check in the process in which there can be a planning review. As a matter of fact, state statute requires a planning review for any acquisition or sale of property. And the reason for that is to take into account any identified plans and priorities that the city already has in the books.
Acquisition or sale, but not reuse, right?
When you say reuse, it would be...
We retain ownership of
the
facility.
Retaining ownership, certainly.
Okay. But we still should, since we're paying for this comprehensive plan, you'd expect us to want to see it through.
You know, if you want to implement a plan to get to where you want to go, it would probably be best to do.
I agree.
Mr. Woodger?
Just had two unrelated items to go through quickly. One, I think you saw staff forward on some of those charts that I made. I dug through that county by county level data. Mm-hmm. And I have, you know, a lot of us have a real concern, and frankly, local legislators from both parties, about tying the zip rail to the DMC fix. And I wanted to ask Gary now, because there was some talk whether or not we should pass a resolution, you know, opposing the tie of the two of them together. Is that something you think we need to do right now? Because we're not going to have another meeting until early March.
I don't know if you need a resolution for that. I'm sure there's consensus that you're not in favor of tying the two together.
Do we have consensus?
That's been expressed to the legislators. Okay. That we
so
were
I think, you know,
unanimous.
We can say with confidence that you're...
All seven of us plus the mayor are not here are clearly opposed to that then? Mm-hmm. Fair saying that? Okay, and then the other thing, I just wanted to give the council a little update. One of the boards I sit on is the Energy Commission. A while ago, we were working on getting an RFP together for an energy action plan, and I forget the amount. I think we had agreed to, like, it was like 44 or 48 or something like that before, and we've been through a few iterations now. I think the last one we got back was about $200,000, and the most recent one is $60,000, and I haven't been through reading that one yet. But anyways, we're getting pretty close to the number, and my only question on this one is, you know, in the past we had supported it about, I think, I can't remember if it was 44 or 48, it was right in there. Does anybody have any heartburn with it now at that level relative to where we were last time we discussed this?
The new number? 60?
Well, I can't even tell you what's in there or not yet, but I'm just asking about the 44 to 48, because
I don't remember our discussion, but if that's what we agreed to, then
yeah, I we'd have to check on the exact number. But I just, and I we just got it back today. There was originally some thought that we'd get it back in time to put it on the agenda for tonight, but when it came back at 60, I think we need to look at it a little bit more. So,
okay, bring it forward.
All right,
Ms. Baker.
I don't think there was any formal action by the council on approving a budget for that yet. So we would still have to come back with the RCA and get authorization to execute the contract.
It was just a discussion like this.
All right. So, okay.
I had an item too. For the next committee of the whole Monday, correct?
Okay.
I'd like to have a discussion about the impact of incentive developments on parkland. In particular. So I was wondering if the consensus of the council would allow me to add that to the agenda.
Please.
With the council's pleasure, what I'd like to do is not schedule a meeting for this coming Monday. I'll be out of town. So it's self-serving. I get that.
I have Skype right here. We'll get you in.
Would it, unless it's time sensitive, could we put that on for March 2nd?
Okay.
Are you with that?
Looking for some information from the staff?
No, I'm going to work with the Parks Department to talk about some of the impacts, and it's kind of a brainstorming, I think, more than anything.
So it's the impact of incentive development on
Incentive development in ways we can tie that to parkland for some of the reuses that we're seeing in the areas that are redeveloping downtown.
Since we're delaying that a little bit too, let's ask Parks to come back with a little bit more information on what a master plan would look like. And the reason why I mean, we're not talking about $80,000 every year. We're talking about $80,000 for a 20- or 30-year plan. And we're talking about if the cost is really, you know, $80,000 right now is the cost of what we're subsidizing for 16 McMansion sewer connections. So we can find the money if we need to.
Is for the park department, is that acceptable? Would you be able to talk about the basics of a park master plan by March 2nd?
Yeah.
Or do you prefer?
Yes. Well, I mean, we can give you more detail as far as a rough estimate. Do you want information what that master plan will accomplish? I think that's going to give a little more detail.
Yeah.
So. I mean, if you could give us a 50,000-foot look.
Yeah.
I mean,
is it okay to ask for that to be distributed
via the managers?
I think it would be a good talking point, too.
Okay.
Gee, I'm shocked.
Well, if that date is acceptable for you, we'll put it on the calendar. I just want to.
If you're okay with the basic information.
Okay.
Yep.
It gets the conversation started. All right. Anything
March
2nd. For the good of the cause?
No. Then everything else is destructive.
See everyone this evening.
And early tomorrow morning.
Drafting here. You guys
got
to go to bed.
You can do it.
I hear wallets opening.
You have a standard chair and
practice. I think the process you're going through now.
Put it in implementation.
What's this? This is amazing. You got one of those in a box. So you sit here.
Yeah, I am.
I came. I can see.